Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson RV, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, and Ray Marine Electronics.
The website is xomtngear.com. And Mark Huesling, I'm just going to apologize to you right now to bring you in with these knuckleheads, but you know, we were picking on each other off air, so you're coming right into a hunting conversation, and you're the right guy to talk to. So One of the things that a lot of guys here have gotten, you know, really interested in the past few years, obviously, Mark, is backpacking in and having your home on your back and all your hunting gear. And your packs make this not only comfortable but effective. In fact, I caught Joey listening to a backpack packing podcast this morning as we carpooled down in here. But tell us about the complexities and welcome to the show, Mark.
Yeah, appreciate it. It's good to be with you guys. And as you said, more and more folks are interested in, you know, hitting the trail or getting away from the truck, living with everything on their back. And I think there's something super appealing about the idea. And then sometimes guys start to think about that idea and start to look at the practical reality of it and maybe get overwhelmed. And so we honestly not only try to provide a great product in terms of a pack system that can allow you to do that. And then what's unique about hunting is obviously at the end of the trip, hopefully you're packing out meat, which our pack system is great for. But we honestly try to provide a lot of information. We do our podcast and giveaway gear lists. And just really, we want, honestly, as many people to have that experience as possible. And so we try to make that happen with both the product as well as some of the content we put out there.
And, you know, Mark, I've been with XO for, I don't know, of maybe 5 or 6 years now. And what drove me to buy an XO pack was when I called XO, the owner, Steve Speck, answered the phone. And I was like, oh, wow. Or you answer the phone, right? I mean, you guys answer the phone. Yeah. And if people have questions, they can contact you. And you guys are great at, like, fitting the right pack or – you know, you guys have an 1800, a 32, a 48, a 64. There's a lot of options for guys, and you can kind of fine tune that to what that guy is going to do. Some guys aren't going to go in the woods and hunt for 7 days. They're going to go in for two. Maybe they don't need a 64. Maybe they need a 48. Talk a little bit about what bags you guys offer and how you go about fitting a hunter with the pack that's going to work for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things for us where we obviously get the good fortune of doing a lot of hunts, and all of our designs just come from our experience. And so we can kind of speak to, as you said, well, here's to consider if you're doing this versus doing that. You know, you did mention the four models that we have. They all use the same frame system. We have what's called our K3 titanium frame. And then those four different models you mentioned are essentially just the different bag sizes that work in conjunction with the frame. And then you can also, at a later date, purchase just another bag, and now you have a multi-bag scenario with the same frame. Because they all use the same frame, they're going to give you the same fit in terms of fitting to your body. They're going to have the same load capacity in terms of being able to haul those heavy loads when you pack out a buck or a bull or a bear at the end of your hunt. And so choosing between the different models is really understanding your hunting style, what type of gear capacity you need, and things like that. You know, one of the common misconceptions, I would say, that we kind of get into are the guys who call and say, hey, I have a 7-day hunt or a 10-day hunt. And they kind of automatically assume they need the biggest bag. And my question usually is to them, like, hey, where are you hunting? What are you hunting? And how are you doing that? Because just because you have 7 days to hunt, like you're like, I have all week off and I'm either in state or going out of state and have this 7-day hunt. Are you really carrying all 7 days worth of food and gear and clothing on your back. And it's great if you are, and we can set you up for that. Or, as you said, Joey, like some of these guys are, they're only going to carry 2 to 4 days worth of stuff because they know that throughout the 7-day hunt, they're either going to move spots after 2 to 4 days. They're going to come back to the truck because they've hopefully filled their tag, or they're going to come back and just, you know, kind of take a breather and a resupply. And so those are the kind of conversations we like to have. And as you said, we're all hunters ourselves here. We're a small crew. And it's funny, like even this time of year, you caught me at a good time, Joey, because literally I'm the only one left to talk today because all the other guys are out hunting. So I drew the short straw of covering
thanks a lot, Mark.
But
drew the short straw. Oh, trust me, we've been called worse.
No doubt.
Now, hey, Mark, Joe got me using one of your packs about 5-6 years ago, too, and I've packed a ton of critters off the hillside with that pack. And it's been somewhat comfortable for years, but not until last year did I realize that I've been doing it wrong this whole time. Load my pack up and you know, you load it up with a lot of weight. I mean, let's face it, you get, any kind of critter down in the backcountry, you're going to be packing a lot of weight out, and you're just like, you know what? This is going to suck. You put it on and down the mountain you go. Well, last year Joe was like, what are you doing? And he readjusted my whole pack and redid everything, redid all the straps, and I was like, oh, my God, it wasn't even that bad. It felt actually, he probably reduced the pain level in half, at least.
I was like, you know, the straps on here, Rob, they're there for a reason.
I'm just flopping all over the place, and I was putting all the meat in the bottom of the pack. Talk about loading your pack and how important that is to actually making it somewhat comfortable and a lot more doable for folks to get a critter off the mountain. Just briefly, before we talk about your Kodiak hunt coming up, because I want to talk about that too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, how you load a pack is going to matter. So whether we're talking about how you put gear in your bag if you are setting off on that 7-day hunt, or as you guys are talking about, how you load it with meat at the end of a trip is going to make a big difference. And, you know, there's physics involved, right? You start looking at things like weight distribution and leverage, and all that begins to matter. And so, you know, it's one of those topics that, you know, I could talk about a ton, but it is difficult to communicate without visuals. We do have some helpful videos on our YouTube channel that are going to show you optimal ways of, okay, you're packing an elk quarter and a skull. Here's how to load that on the pack. Or you're packing a cape and some horns. Here's how to load that on your pack. But yeah, short story is it makes a big difference in how you do that. And it's one of the reasons we encourage guys to really work with the pack before season with weight. And so you can take something like that 80-pound bag of sand or concrete or water softener salt or whatever and essentially pretend that's a game bag. And now you want to load that on the frame, get used to the comfort of that, kind of fine-tune the fit for you. And at the end of the day, as great as online resources are, like videos and all that I mentioned, reach out to us. Like, we have all the time guys send in photos of them wearing the pack. I've hopped on FaceTime calls with guys to make sure that things are loaded up before season. You know, as you guys know, when you kill an animal and you're doing a lot of hard work to take care of that meat in a clean and quick manner, and now, you know, your gear's been yard sailed on the side of a mountain and you're usually trying to beat the heat or use daylight. Like, in those moments, it's not the time you want to try and figure this thing out, right? So two things to that. One is we keep our packs simple for a reason. They're very user-friendly. We don't want them to be complicated. And number two, hopefully before you get into that moment, you've done some preseason work to really get some weight on the pack system and get used to how to load it for you.
Yeah, and that's what Joe helped me out with last year, which is why Joey's a lot better hunter than I am. he got me all straightened out in that regard. Now, one of the coolest over-the-counter, do-it-yourself adventure hunts out of state that you can possibly do is a Sitka blacktail hunt on Kodiak Island. It's just epic up there. Lots of deer. You can buy tags right over the counter. You guys are headed up there pretty quick, aren't you, during the rut to do that hunt again? I think you went up a couple years ago, and it sounds like you're headed back again this year, right?
Yeah, we went in 2019 for the first time, and had an absolute blast. I'm not the most experienced hunter out there, but I've gotten to hunt quite a few species in quite a few places. And Kodiak, like, for whatever reason, it's just a special place. Getting up there, being on the island, chasing those deer, which are awesome. The remoteness of it, you know, the idea of Kodiak brown bears running around, like, it was awesome. And it's also fairly accessible, like, way more accessible than guys probably think, can be way more affordable than people might imagine. It's something you can do on yourself. You can go to a lodge, you can hunt off of a boat. Like, there's all different ways to hunt Kodiak, which is also really appealing. You can hunt it in August, September, October, yep. November, December. You know, you can find the time and a way to make it happen. And after doing that in 2019, it was me and Steve, who's the founder of Exo Mountain Gear, and one of our buddies, the three of us. And we had such a blast. Now we're going back up this fall and taking, I think there's a total of 8 guys on the trip. And so it's going to be a hoot. As you said, there's a lot of deer up there. We're going to do some fishing while we're up there. And it's a great way to, you know, even we realized after that hunt, even for newer hunters, you know, it may seem counterintuitive to make this big trip to Alaska, but if you're new to, like, Western hunting or packing out game or glassing or stalking, because Kodiak is, you know, a pretty target rich environment, you have the opportunity to fill multiple tags, you know, make multiple stalks and shots. And, you know, even in terms of packing and taking care of game, like, you can just get so much action condensed into, you know, a week long trip. I think it's a great option, even for guys who are relatively new. So I can't wait to get back.
I couldn't agree with you more. Kodiak is so cool. And the Fognak has elk. And what a lot of people, Mark, don't really realize is how temperate Kodiak is. It's temperature wise, rainfall wise, it's a lot like Western Washington, right? But you're going to, you know, you run out of daylight, mm-hmm. obviously, this time of year, but Kodiak is so cool. Before I let you go, we're talking with Mark Huesling, Exo Mountain Gear. Go check out their YouTube channel. It's Exo Mountain Gear, and the website is Exo, MTNGEAR, ExoMountainGear.com. A lot of people don't take the time to load that pack and train with it, right? Before you go hunting, mm-hmm. man, you need to fill that thing up and pack it. What is your training regimen, briefly, before we let you go? Getting that pack on your back and start doing hills. How do you approach the hunting season getting ready to really go with one of those Exo Mountain Gear packs?
Yeah. My situation is a bit unique because obviously I'm always even testing packs or ideas or new designs, right? So number one, I try to keep hike year round. And I honestly encourage serious hunters to do that period. You don't have to go for long. It doesn't have to be super heavy, but you know, it's so much easier to stay in shape than it is to quote unquote get in shape. Right. So even in the winter, even in the off season, I try to tell guys get out once a week at bare minimum once every other week. But obviously as you get closer to season, you want to get more specific with your training. And the way I think about training for packing and for packing heavy loads specifically is you have a few variables. You can increase your distance, you can increase your weight in the pack, or you can increase your speed or your intensity. What you can't do is increase all three of those at the same time, right? And so I really encourage guys to vary their training so that maybe some training hikes are longer, but not as heavy or intense. Maybe some training hikes are heavier, but they're not going to be as long or as fast. Maybe you have some training hikes that are a bit faster. You're pushing the pace, raising the heart rate, but they're not going to be as long or they're not going to be as heavy on the pack weight. And so you want to kind of modulate that. You don't need every training hike to be 80 pounds. You don't need every training hike to be hours and hours long. You can vary those different aspects of training in terms of weight, distance or time, and then that speed or intensity, and really get yourself some training in that way. The thing that guys overlook is, as good as it is to hit the gym or even run, carrying weight places demands on the body that a lot of folks don't realize in terms of fine musculature, things like joints and tendons, as well as even things like the demand through your midsection as you're packing weight up top and transferring that weight to your legs. And so it is one of those physical endeavors that can be pretty specific. Thankfully, getting out and training's fun, getting outside's fun, testing the boots before season is another aspect of getting those miles in. And so I say, don't put the pack down, you know, year round, try and use it, take it on fishing trips, take it on other things as you can, and just spend time with it. And as you do that, you'll get so comfortable, you almost forget it's on your back at times.
And bottom line is, your first day of putting that pack on your back should not be opening day heading up the hill, that's for sure. He's Mark Huesling, XO Mountain Gear. Mark, thanks for your time. I am going to take in that podcast, man. I'm fascinated about this stuff, and it's a great way to train, is get some weight on your back. We appreciate it, and good luck this
season.
Thanks,
Mark. See you, buddy.
And I'm sorry about your short straw, dude. You know.
Thanks, Mark.
See you, buddy. Have a great weekend, man. Good luck hunting. All right.
All right. Coming up next, a critically acclaimed award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The Northwest Outdoor Report is brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
Fishery managers in Washington and Oregon just reopened the Columbia River for Chinook and Hatchery Coho. From Warrior Rock to the fishing deadlines just below Bonneville Dam, the river opens today and anglers can keep two salmon a day, only one of which can be a Chinook or two hatchery silvers. Fishery managers are currently evaluating whether the lower river from Tongue Point to Warrior Rock can be reopened for salmon fishing.
Dave Johnson, Kitsap Marine in Port Archer, said the silver fishing out of CQ right now is as good as it gets. Dave plans a bucktail for silvers this weekend out of Coho, out of CQ, an old school technique that involves trolling bucktail flies on the surface with little or no weight. It's fun, deadly effective for silvers in the Straits. Dave said the halibut fishery is still open in the Straits and off the North Coast on Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays through September 25th. There's a good number of chickens off of Pillar Point and the garbage dump near CQ. Off the coast of Prairie West, the Lapush has been holding plenty of halibut, and the lingcod fishing is wide open. Dave's like to run either a big pipe jig or a heavy triangle head jig with a grub for lings or halibut off the coast.
Nick Kester from All Star Charters says the coho fishing in the North Sound is the best he's seen in years. Kester said he's had early limits of pink-sick coho on his last two charters. He says the cooler weather seems to be pushing silvers in because he ran into some big schools yesterday. Nick likes to troll glow hoochies behind a glow UV Gibbs flasher around 2.5 to 3.5 miles per hour for silvers in the Sound. He said they caught most of their silvers yesterday between 50 and 80 feet down on the downrigger. With the numbers of silvers showing in CQ right now, he expects excellent fishing for the next few weeks in the Sound as well.
Today's the Edmonds Coho Derby that has a $5,000 purse for first place and $10,000 in total cash prizes. Derby was canceled last year due to COVID, and the Snow King chapter of the Puget Sound Anglers is excited to have this event back online again this year. The Ever Coho Derby is coming up the weekend of September 25th and 26th with cash prizes totaling $20,000 and thousands more in merchandise. The Ever Coho Derby is the largest derby in the state and typically attracts over 1,000 participants. Tickets are available at most tackle shops, and you can find more information online at everettcohoderby.com.
First tentative Razor Clam digs coming up. The first Razor Clam digs of the season are scheduled for September 17th through the 20th with opportunities to dig on all four coastal beaches. With Razor Clam closed much of the last season, there's an abundance of razor clams on the coast, and WDFW has bumped that daily limit up from 15 to 20 to take advantage of those big numbers. Low tide for these digs early in the morning. It was a low at 4:30 a.m. on Friday the 17th. If you miss these digs, don't worry. There's 62 total days of razor clam digging tentatively scheduled between now and the end of the year. Watch for an announcement from WDFW early this week, giving the go-ahead for the first dig of the season.
Archery elk hunters hit the woods today in Washington on both the east and west side of the mountains. The archery season runs through September 11th through the 23rd. Be sure to check out the regulations for units that are open and see what elk can be harvested. The weather has been cooling off, which is good news for the elk hunters. There are some fires around the state, though, that may affect your hunting plans. Be sure to check out the Northwest Large Fire Interactive web map online before heading out.
Next weekend, September 18th and 19th, is the Youth Pheasant Hunter release sites in Western Washington. Hunters 65 and over and hunters with disabilities get to hit the sites September 20th through the 24th. And then the general season on the west side on pheasant release sites starts on September 25th. The general pheasant season opens in Eastern Washington on October 23rd.
The Northwest Outdoor Report has been brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
You haven't had a Half Lion yet, have you?
Not yet.
We were into the blonde, log show blonde.
Yeah, that's good.
Oh, man. Yeah. All right. I may give you a can of it. Just one or two. You got to try it. They're a big deal at the
Is that what you put
ballpark.
In your pack to train? You
that's what
load
I
with
put
beer.
In,
load it with
yeah,
beer.
That's what I would.
It gets lighter and lighter equivalent. The further you go.
I know. That's about the equivalent of a sandbag.
That's true.
Like yeah. sandbag? I'm, I don't use any sandbag. I put a growler of beer in there.
What am I, a wuss?
Yeah, come on. Sandbag.
With it, can you get a hydration system? Can you run a tube out of a keg, you know, and put it on your back?
Of course you could. Yeah.
We do that. All right. Foam dome. Todd Daniels, Tall Tales Guide Service. He is on a pile of pinks.
He is the humpy slayer.
He is the humpy hammer. And but I tell you what, if you've never been down and experienced late September down on the Cowlitz River, where you don't know what the next thing is going to bite. It's going to be a coho. It's going to be a late steelhead. It's going to be a Chinook. Rob Ensley back in the studio. Have you noticed?
Yeah.
There's him sitting over there. Todd Daniels joining us next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's wheelhouse, brought to you by Wellcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
He's an all-around angler. He's busy all year, and he's got the second oldest website on the web. He is Todd River Dog Daniels. How you doing there, Todd?
Good morning, boys. How are you?
We're doing good. Great,
how you doing,
man?
Buddy?
Doing good. Are you out on the creek right now,
good,
buddy?
Good. I am, and in fact, I am multitasking right now, taking pictures of fish and talking to you fine folks. How's it going?
It's going good, man. So tell us about this pink fishery that's just absolutely completely wide open here on the North Sound Rivers right now. What is going on the creek right now, buddy?
You know what's weird is where we're at. There's about four boats. We're in eyesight, and between each boat, there's about 30,000 pinks in between.
Wow.
that may be a low number. You know what it is? It's this huge biomass that we get, as we talked about before, you know, every couple years. And it's just a fun time of year to go out. And, you know, like I always say, we have to go out and get to go catching. We're not going fishing. We're going catching. It's just a matter of how many you hook in any given day. And, it's fun out here. You know, nice weather, lots of fish. I mean, you know, twitching these jigs and throwing dick nights through these holes and whatnot, and they fight really, really hard. So it's a hoot, man.
And the creeks are super low. I say creek, I mean, our rivers are super low. You're on the Snohomish system, but boy, the Snohomish, Skagit, all those rivers that we pulled them up at the beginning of the show here. I mean, they are bone dry right now. And one of the ways to catch those fish in there, you mentioned it, is throwing dick nights. And the other thing that loves to eat a dick night are those cohos coming in. Do you change your colors up a little bit this time of year when you start getting some cohos trickling in to try to pop one of those in there mixed in with the horde of pinks in the creek right now?
Yeah, so what we do is I stick to, with the dick nights anyways, I stick to more of the traditional coho colors, you know, in your 50-50s, your frogs and things like that. And that's historically always been those coho colors. But the pinks like them too, so it's a win-win on that. You know, and over the last week, we certainly started to pick up a few more coho in here. You know, you can only keep hatchery fish, so you know there's not a whole lot of the hatchery fish in here quite yet. But you know, you can always see them. You know, the pinks when they roll, they kind of just will slap the water surface and not really jump out of the water very high. And then you look and you'll see a bright chrome, you know, 10, 12 pound silver, what have you, just come about 4 feet out of the water, right in the same hole. So it's fun to see and whatnot. But, what I say, you pick your hole and, there's, 500, pinks in your hole and there's, three coho. So you can do the math. It's a little tough right now as far as getting the coho, but that's a good problem to have when there's too many fish to catch other fish. So, you know what I mean?
So I've been checking in with you every once in a while in the evening just to see how it's going up there. And, you're like, we got like 90 or so today. It wasn't like red hot. So what's an average day like? How many fish are people getting to the boat?
I would say on an average
honkers.
Day. It's,
honkers.
Know,
we hear geese.
This is about...
We hear geese.
There's geese around here.
Take them. Yes.
Cast and blast. Yes.
Shoot.
Take them.
I would say it's average probably about 20 hookups a person on average.
Wow.
Out here. And, hookups, not necessarily land, right? Because you do lose them and, lose them at the boat, lose them out there. Because the only thing that's kind of cool, too, is, depending on where you're at, when you're twitching these jigs or some of these holes, it's really fun. These pinks will chase these things for a long ways, and if you're paying attention, have good polarized glasses, you can actually see them chasing these things down. And I can't tell you how many we've had literally hook them right at the boat. And we got a fish on right now.
Yeah.
And, nice. Sorry, I'm trying to multitask.
Dick Knight or a jig? What do you got them on? What the fish?
We're getting on a jig right now. Mm-hmm. Yep.
When I talked to you the other day, you weren't even netting fish anymore. You were just, you said, look, if I grab the leader and it makes it in the boat, we keep it. If it doesn't, you got to catch another one.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, where it becomes the point. Like, you know,
What kind of jigs are you using? Are you tying your own jigs? Are you buying some kind of jig?
Honestly, anything pink is going to work. And depending on the hole, quarter ounce jigs work really good. Mm-hmm. 3/8, I kind of stick in those realms. Anything pink, and one of the more overlooked colors, for this, especially when the bite gets a little bit tougher sometimes in the afternoon, is white. Don't give up on your white jigs with a little bit of pink on it. And there's something about those that they in the afternoon with the sun out, it can certainly trigger a bite. So because if you go more than 5 minutes out of the bite, you got to mix it up, right? So
Todd Daniels, talltalesguideservice.com, joining us this morning. So Todd, put this pink run in perspective, because I'm seeing bigger pinks than I've seen in a long time. I'm seeing more pinks than we've seen in a really long time. I mean, is this the biggest run we've seen in a decade? I mean, give me a little perspective on this.
It's going to be hard to say, because it's kind of cool when you're running upriver. You're bringing it over here, and sorry, multitasking here, guys. Running upriver, and you look in these shallows as you go through these tail outs and whatnot, and it literally looks like the bottom of the river is moving.
That's so cool.
All the fish in there. I mean, literally thousands of them sitting at every tail out. So it's going to be really interesting. I think the last time we had, over a million fish was in about 2009, 10, somewhere about that time frame. And yeah, it'll be real interesting to see how this ends up, if it's going to be somewhere close to that, because they're literally everywhere. Jokingly, the other when I was talking to Joey earlier this week, and you're fishing off the port side of the boat, and hook a fish for a little bit, and heck, reel in, go cast over to starboard side, and like I said, they're everywhere.
I was like, you're a great guide when you're like, you're not getting them on that side of the boat. Try that side of the boat.
Try
I don't know.
Side of the boat.
They're over there too. So what are you doing next? You travel around, hit all the hottest fisheries. What's the next thing on the list for you?
Yeah, so this thing closes here, guys, on the 19th of this month, and we're done. We're shut down. So what we do after that is pack up shop and I head south, and I'll go start hitting those Southwest Washington rivers between the Lewis and the Cowlitz and whatnot. We're predicting, well over 100,000 coho back to the Cowlitz River. And those are huge numbers. And they're just starting to come in now, with all the kings. And the peak of that is, first couple weeks of October. And, if it's anything remotely close like what it was in 2014, it's going to be amazing. Amazing, so much fun there. You're basically every drift you're hooking fish.
And what are you doing down there? Are you mostly running eggs and shrimp, or
exactly. Yeah. So when I get down there, for me personally, I'm an egg guy. I like eggs, and when in doubt, throw more eggs. And if you're using our ultralight steelhead rods, and you're drifting the eggs through a hole, and 25-pound king picks it up and starts taking off on it, and oh shucks, right? It's a lot of fun. You let that thing go, and you go back up to the top of the run. You roll some eggs back down through the same hole, and you'll get your coho as well.
So Joey and I will volunteer to come down there and scout that out with you. So if you need, if you need somebody to cast into a tree or feed a squirrel or something like that, we're going to be there for you, buddy.
I do see that a time or two.
Yeah, I know you.
Plenty of eggs,
bridges, somebody. Other boats.
Yeah, bring lots of your eggs. I'm not bringing any of mine. Nelly's going to be casting them off.
We want to burn your gear for a change. Yeah. He's Todd Daniels, talltalesguideservice.com. Get back to work there, buddy. You only have 99 more to catch today, and then you can take the rest of the day off.
Now we're about 90, so we're good.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, we're fine.
Thank you, Todd. Okay. Go get him, buddy.
See all right, guys.
Later, man.
You guys have a great day.
You too, buddy. Right. Good luck. All right, coming up next, the hottest report we heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed is Roy Robinson Chevy RVs. Really? Where? And it's next here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really?
Where?
It's coming back.
The island is tin in the lady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell anybody.
The ocean turned red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got him?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonRV.com's
Really?
Where? RoyRobinsonRV.com will take you anywhere.
Really?
Whether you're looking for Class A diesels, motorhomes, Class Bs, Class Cs, Super Cs, travel trailers, fifth wheels, toy haulers, pop-ups, campers, matters not. You're going to find them all at Roy Robinson RV, including that brand new Echo by Winnebago. Check all them out and more at their smooth Smoky Point location, 15855 Smoky Point Boulevard, RoyRobinsonRV.com.
Bravo. So much going on for this week's Really Where. I'm going to CQ. If I'm headed out this weekend, I'm headed out there to rub some of those coho. We've had quite a few texts here this morning. People are limiting out early at CQ right now. And again, I've mentioned this throughout the show. I've talked to Dave Johnson at Kitsap Marina. He was headed up there with his five-weight fly rods and another friend. They were going to bucktail out there. It's one of the few places in the state where the bucktailing thing really works good. Just dragging bucktail flies on the surface.
Like four knots, five knots.
Oh, yeah, fast.
Yeah, you're cruising.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. And just getting roped by big cohos on the surf. Super, super, super fun. Hanging onto the rod in a lot of cases because there aren't many rod holders you can actually put a fly rod in without it sailing right out of the boat. So just a kick in the ass.
You
so think there's that going on.
You got to take Toback off the tuna hump. He'd go do that and be happy doing that and just not cry. No, he'd still be mad.
No.
Okay, all right.
No.
All right.
If he was with you.
That's true.
That'd he'd be mad anyway.
Yeah.
So
that's true.
Yeah. So, right. And then Columbia River. Just reopened from Warrior Rock up to the dam, up to the deadlines of Bonneville.
That's where I'd be.
Oh, yeah. Man.
And so you got a Chinook opportunity there. And one of the go-to techniques now just has evolved into something that we started doing at Buoy 10, obviously, is the small spinner behind the finned Pro-Troll flasher. And you actually gauge your speed by how fast that rod is thumping down there. So you're using lead. And so the first time I ever hooked a Chinook on that technique was literally within sight of the red line and underneath the I-5 bridge.
With a size 3 spinner.
Little tiny
Colorado blade.
18-inch leaders sometimes. That thing is whipping around. And those it's crazy that those big Chinook are grabbing that spinner. But crazy effective. And that's what guys are doing up above is they're running those little tiny spinner blades.
And
you better come with a bunch of different blades because it matters.
Oh,
it'll
be
like, oh, you don't have the Mexican hat with the purple dot? Oh, yeah, you're not going to catch anything, man.
And so the my biggest Chinook at Buoy 10, one of my biggest kings of the year and strike of the year honors goes to a 28.5 pounder that we got on a spinner and a 360. It's just, dude, the strikes are horrific. I mean, so much fun. But that's what's going to go on. You know, in that stretch between Warrior Rock and Bonneville, you got a Chinook opportunity, big kings in the Columbia.
Yeah, and then we just had Todd Daniels on. Pink sand is still just, it's going to go here for a couple more weeks. And the pinks literally will be in there until the end of September, early October, because they're going to be doing their thing towards the end of the month, early October. They'll be around. But really, the next couple of weeks, you still got a good opportunity to catch those. And a little crossover fishing here with some silvers coming in, too. Now, the Snohomish is going to close the 19th, but there'll be opportunity elsewhere. And then here coming up, you know, the rest of this month is going to be Puget Sound for cohos as well.
And the Skagit goes through October 15th.
Yeah.
And that's only going to get better and better for coho.
For sure.
They're going to have a really good coho fishery up there too.
Archery elk today opens up in the woods. We got a couple friends out crawling around right now. Your friend Ryan Bayless, actually our mutual friend Ryan Bayless, was sitting in his tent last night.
No, my friend.
Yeah, your friend. Okay, I'm piggybacking on that one a little bit, but sitting in his tent all night. I guarantee he wasn't sleeping.
No.
Listening to the elk scream in the woods down there all night long. So he's down crawling around looking for an elk right now. And we've got youth hunt next weekend, 18th and 19th, and a razor clam opportunity start next Friday as well. It's tentatively scheduled, but I'm pretty sure that the test results are going to come back positive, positive news on Monday, Tuesday, and we're going to get that dig.
So. Negative for the toxin,
positive for the opportunity. Yeah.
So the bottom line is, and I
shouldn't say anything test results positive.
No.
I should never say that right now with all this COVID crap going on.
Counter,
I never want to say that.
Counterintuitive.
No. Yeah. No. You'd be tossed right in a about a dumpster.
But the thing
in the dumpster.
you got to get out and experience what's going on in Puget Sound right now. I've not seen, and you know, Joey and I kind of have not seen fish this size and as many of them as you're currently seeing you know, in the south end of Marine Area 81, coming in Area 10, Area 9, wherever you want to go, that part of the sound, and even on down in the south sound, we've talked to our friend Bob Buchanan, who's down there in 11 and 13, and there's coho coming through there too. Not just the numbers of these fish, but the individual size. And this has me so fired up over the prospect of watching that ocean bounce back from what we went through, you know, the blob and all that crap, and the productivity that we're seeing is driving tremendous size of these fish. And if you think it's good now, and if you think you had a decent Chinook year now, dude, next year we're going to see lots of big kings. I mean, there's no question about it. You saw the same kind of upswing too. The folks I talked to at Peregrine Lodge are seeing the same upswing there. I mean,
it's when he goes to sleep at night, do you think it's just his eyes closed and there's just a big Chinook salmon?
That's why
that's all
help.
He sees.
That's why his
and then he falls asleep and he dreams about he's swimming with the Chinook.
10 days and
eating
a couple
herring,
2 day follow ups. Tom,
chasing anchovies.
When I retire from fishing, I'm starting a clinic. Okay. And every time you think about a salmon, you'll throw up a little bit in your mouth. You'll be like, no, you'll be done.
That's what I thought this show was a group counseling session.
No, but no. It's not, you're messed up, dude. No, there's something seriously the matter with you.
You know this. This is not news.
That's why your boat name should be Rock Bottom.
Yeah, there we go.
You have hit rock bottom.
Absolutely rock bottom, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Sea Beast doesn't really do much for your boat.
Yes, that does.
It's kind of not really becoming of a beautiful boat. Your boat is a beautiful boat, and that's just kind of not really a nice name for that boat.
The boat named itself as soon as I walked up to it. That was
you
yes.
named it because you're messed up in the head.
Well, yes.
That's why you named it the Sea Beast.
Tell me about spending 4 months up in Southeast Alaska. Build a house up there so you can run people through Chinook and halibut. You know?
That's fine.
Yeah, you're both,
that's
both of you guys.
Because
else.
That's
you're
normal.
You're both screwed
that's
up.
That's normal.
But I think about something else the rest
no, you
of
don't.
The year. Yeah,
no, you
do.
Don't. No, you
think. No, you just come back and then you think about hunting.
Yes, that's it.
He just gets hung up on until it's closed and there's no opportunity. Until
listen,
next July,
I remember,
then he won't.
Listen,
you know,
hang on,
he'll
hang
still
on.
He'll
Tobeck,
still talk about it in
Rob
January.
Rob Tobeck
a little bit.
And Tom and I are in Costa Rica. It's 88 degrees. There's sailfish jumping on the horizon. There's porpoise everywhere. There's yellowfin tuna. I mean, it is epic. And Tom is looking at dam counts on Bonneville dam counts. And Tobeck and I are like, "What are you doing? We just landed a 70-pound Dorado. It's like the most epic day ever." And Tom's like, "Guys, look at the spring Chinook. Look, there's four over the dam today.
Four?
Yeah.
It's time. It's go time.
It's go time. There were four over the dam.
It's go time in Skamakaway.
Get
Let's
me
go.
On a plane. I got to get
so
out of here.
Funny. It's all good. It's
oh,
all
dude,
good.
Mount it's an electric good. Anchor winch on your boat and buy 10 more electric reels and halibut fish all summer and tell me how messed up I am. That's you.
Yeah.
That is absolutely you.
Unfortunately, I do this for a living.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But that. So I do like to talk to you about kind of your summer, and we talked about this before the show started, though, about how that anchoring deal worked into your game plan this summer and how the anchoring and electric reels work in. And guys can use a lot of that program in the high current situations here for halibut and other bottom fish stuff.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, you got to be patient.
You do.
And that really tested me a couple times this summer because I'm sitting there on some of my key halibut areas, and there's nothing going on. I mean, you're just sitting there going, okay, it's like, okay, an hour?
Yeah.
Okay, hour and a half. And then here they come, getting towards tide change. And one of the things you had to do is keep running fresh baits down.
100%.
Keep bombing stuff down there with a lot of scent, like a pink head with all the guts hanging off of
it. Yep.
Saving that from the day before, or they're cutting cohos on the dock. You know, save the head with all the carcass on it. That's going down. That's now a scent bomb.
Yeah.
And all the little critters down there will pick that to pieces. So in 15, 20 minutes, there's hardly anything left. All the sand fleas and the little cod and everything down there will be picking at that thing. And you got to constantly be changing that stuff out and keeping that scent trail going. And if you do that, they'll come. I mean, they'll be coming. We don't run chum bags up there because we anchor so deep. Right. Here in the Sound, though, you anchor shallow. You can run a chum bag off your anchor or off the down rear. It works great. But when we're anchoring in, you know, 250 to 450, 500 feet of water, it doesn't work because the boat's over there, your gear's over here, and it just doesn't line
up. You're attracting the halibut.
Over
they
there.
Might, yeah. I was surprised at how often Nelly was swapping out the bait. As soon as you run it down there, you'd get like a ting, 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 tapping on it, you know, and you just sit there
get
and
it
wait.
Up.
Mm-hmm. And then you'd wait a give it 30 seconds if something didn't happen.
Give it a bit.
Nelly's like, get it up. Boom. Fresh bait.
And don't bring them all at the same time. Bring them one at a time.
No.
Keep it fit. Make sure you're fishing, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole swapping out the bait thing.
And it was fun. Dude, and I found
and then when it does happen, it's chaos. It's like, there's one.
Oh, for sure. When it starts going, it's like, holy cow, here they come. But I found that when the current was the strongest was the best because it's carrying that scent downstream and just making that central one. When we had like big soaker tides, just sit there and watch the paint dry.
Yeah,
you might as well just drift at that point.
Mm-hmm. Covered
on those big, really ripper tides is when the halibut fishing would just be crazy, especially at tide change because they're sitting tight till tide change. They're not doing anything. So then they all have to feed at tide change. And that's when we would just, it would actually be, for me to say halibut fishing was fun. It was fun.
And that was
awesome.
It is. And that's the wonderful thing about, you know, the help you can get. All right, dude, I really, really hate to say this, but it was great to have you back in studio.
Oh, likewise. First time in studio in 18 months or something, long time. And see you guys and all that stuff.
So. All right, stay tuned for the John Clayton Show right after us, Mariner Baseball, a little bit later in the day. Give us a follow on social media at Joe Pyburn on Instagram, at Rob Ensley, at The Outdoor Line on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. For Matt Nelson behind the glass, for Joey Pyburn, Rob Ensley, I'm Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.